In the debate over gun rights of the visually impaired may seem to be a side issue, but some blind people do own weapons. In Iowa, they can get a concealed carry permit, to the surprise of some. Here in Illinois, some blind people go hunting with a little assistance. Today on Focus, we'll talk about firearms and the visually impaired in light of Illinois' brand new concealed carry law. We'll hear from an Iowa sheriff who supports concealed carry rights for the blind, a longtime hunter who continues to hunt despite losing his sight, and an official with the Illinois Council of the Blind. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Recently, the Des Moines Register reported that several counties had granted permits to carry concealed weapons to people who were legally and perhaps completely blind. There appears to be nothing in Iowa's nearly three-year-old concealed carry law that addresses visual impairment. Officials say that, therefore, they can't make visual impairment grounds for rejection. This is an item of discussion in Iowa now, and it may soon be an item of discussion in Illinois, where the new concealed carry law also does not seem to address the subject of visual impairment. And there are those who are fine with that, and they know that there are already blind people who possess firearms for self-defense and hunting, and they shouldn't automatically be barred from carrying them on the street as well. Later on the program, we'll meet with an Iowa sheriff who supports concealed carry for the visually impaired. Right now, I want to introduce you to someone who happens to be blind and who is a hunter. Jeremy Holderfield lives in Dungola down in southern Illinois. I believe we're talking to him in Highland now. Jeremy, welcome to Focus.
Thank you.
And Jeremy, I understand now you've been hunting pretty much all your life as it is, but you only lost your sight in the last few years.
Yes, I started losing my sight back in 99, and back then I just kind of gave up my hunting. You know, I was raised around it, and I just made the decision myself that, you know, I couldn't do it at the time. And then back in 2002, I met my wife then. We became together then, and her family was big-time hunters and stuff, and she got me wanting to hunt again, and over the next 2 years, we've just adapted things with crossbows and shotguns to where she could look down over my shoulder and line me up on deer or ducks, and she'll whisper to me left, right, up, down, and then when we're right where we need to be, she'll tell me to shoot. And you know, it took 2 years to get it to where we are today, you know. And it's been a blessing. I'm glad to be back out in the woods hunting again. I got five boys and one daughter, and my five boys are all following in, you know, me and my dad's footsteps in hunting. And I just think the tradition of hunting should just stay around, even if you're blind. If you got the capability of it, do it. And if not, get a hold of me somehow. Someone in Illinois, you know, should be able to find a way to get a hold of me. And I'll help them. I'll talk to them and get them going on the right path on the way to hunt.
Well, I'm wondering, this sounds like it's really a team effort when you go hunting now, I take it.
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, my wife helps me, you know, shoot my gun, my crossbow. My mom even helps me, and three of my five boys help me shoot. I got two younger ones that ain't big enough to go out there and hunt yet, but they're all into it. They're all, you know, they all help, and it's a team effort, and it's a good thing. You know, when you got a close-knit family like I got, you know, when love in your family's there's nothing that any individual with any kind of, I won't even call it a handicap, but just has an imperfection in their life. There's nothing when the family loves you that you can't do. So,
well, it sounds when you enjoy doing things together, that's certainly going to be a boost to any activity. Before you lost your sight, was hunting something that you did with other people, or were you pretty much by yourself?
Me and my dad hunted a lot. You know, at the time, my kids were younger, and I took them with me, but, you know, they at the time didn't, you know, get to shoot a gun because, you know, they're just still a little too young. But, you know, me and my dad, we'd go deer hunting together. Me and my mom's been deer hunting together before I lost my eyesight. duck hunting, goose hunting. Goose hunting was my biggest thing. That was my most favorite thing to do, was the goose hunt. And still today, I love to get out there and shoot some snow geese all day long. So
these days you hunt geese. What other animals do you hunt?
Geese, ducks, deer. I'm starting to get into doing a little turkey hunting now. Dove hunt. Me and my boy was dove hunting the other day, and I shot four doves. And my brother-in-law took me on the early teal season hunt. It's a duck, teal is. And actually killed my first blue-winged teal this year. And I was about a 40-yard shot, and he lined me up, my brother-in-law did, and I rolled it over, and, you know, it's in the refrigerator right now waiting to get cooked. So.
Well, I'm wondering, does this limit what you can fire at? I mean, in terms of, like, being able to fire at a moving target compared to a stationary one?
Moving target is very challenging. You know, it can be done, you know. We've done it. It's very hard, you know, to do. And, like I said, when you got a flock of ducks coming in there, you know, you got five guys jumping up and shooting, you know, that time there, I don't have no one helping me aim, but they tell me, hey, Dad, when you come up, you know, go straight up about at a 45-degree angle and then, you know, shoot. And, you know, I've killed a duck doing it that way before. But, you know, that's with a big flock. When a single duck comes in, you know, you got to have that person behind you to help you.
It sounds like the communications between you and the person assisting you have to be really good.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you got to trust them, and what they're saying is correct for you. And, you know, where I hunt, you know, I do hunt some public grounds down in Horseshoe Lake, down in Illinois, southern part of Illinois, Alexander County. It's a state-run duck hunting hole down there. And you sign in, you know, they have no problems with me hunting down there. They enjoy seeing me come over there and hearing my stories about duck hunting and stuff. And the game warden down in Southern Illinois, a real good guy. He's always constantly calling me up and asking me how things are going, if there's anything he can do to help me. And, you know, it's a big support. You know, once you get going with it, everybody wants to support you in it, and it's a wonderful thing.
And how accurate can you be working as essentially a team? The fire off, is your accuracy the same as it was when you had your sight?
No, it's not as accurate. No, I mean, with my crossbow, I have shot at 15 deer. I have put 11 of them in my freezer. Three of them I just cleanly missed, because when I shot, they jumped up in air, so I missed them completely. And one I hit and just wounded it, but it wasn't a wound that they would die from. It was just a kind of a flesh wound is all it was.
That was with the crossbow, but with the shotgun?
With my shotgun, I have pulled the trigger at a deer three times, and I have put one of them in my freezer.
Okay.
It's a little bit more different with a shotgun, because, you know, you're shooting a deer slug, and it's most time the deer are out there, you know, 60, 70 yards away from you, and you move a quarter of an inch back here, it makes, you know, 2 foot difference out there, at, you know, 70 yards.
And I take it it's really none of your other senses are helping you personally in locating an animal. I guess if you were a wolf, you might be smelling them, but simply as a human
hearing,
being.
My hearing, you know. I can hear the deer walking through the woods, and I can get pretty much lined up close enough to where the deer is.
So the hearing, the hearing does play a role, at least with deer, huh?
Yes, and ducks. I mean, the ducks are coming in there, you know, they're quacking and, you know, having a good time coming in. Everyone meet with their buddies. Well, their buddies are decoys, and then they end up getting shot. But, yeah, you can hear their wings beating. You can, you know, hear a little feet chatter going through the air, and, you know, yeah, every animal makes a sound. If they're walking, it's very distinct. You know, there's a difference between squirrels and deer. Some people say they sound alike, but they're different. You know, ducks flying through the air. I couldn't tell you what kind of duck it was flying through the air, but I could tell you it was a duck or a dove or a crow flying through there, though.
Is that, did you have that same awareness of the sounds that animals made when you had your sight?
Yes, yes.
So it was always something you were being, it was always something you were aware of when you were hunting.
Right.
Just now in a different context.
Yes, I used to pay attention, you know, to my eyes and a little bit of my hearing, but now, you know, it's all in my hearing that I pay attention to now, so.
Now, I was, like, yeah, go ahead.
I said, it's not like that, you know, my senses are intense. I just pay more attention to my senses nowadays, my other ones.
Is this something that you think someone hunting, that someone could take up after they had lost their sight?
Yes, with the proper training, yeah, definitely. I would encourage, you know, like I said, I got three boys now that are hunting, and 2 or 6 of me coming up hunting, and I encourage anybody to bring a kid and hunting with them, because, you know, it's an honor to go out and, you know, take a duck or a deer or something and, you know, take it and, you know, to the meat, to the table and stuff. It's the way our ancestors done it, and it should be the way we do it today still, you know. Now, don't get me wrong, there ain't nothing going to the grocery store and getting a steak or anything, but, you know, I don't go out there and just kill something just to be killing it. I kill it to provide food for my family.
Tell me, do you know of any other blind people who are hunting?
Right now I know of 2 other individuals. One of them has taken it up after I did, and there supposedly was an individual, I'm not sure what his name is, that done it a few years before I started to, and then he got out of it for some reason. Don't know why.
Okay, so it's nothing that's really heavily organized in Illinois, I take it?
No.
Okay, I was thinking about this because apparently it is a little more organized and, I guess, formally state-sanctioned in Iowa, but here in Illinois there's nothing formal in the law about it, I take it, or
no.
In the hunting regulations.
No, I go out and do like everybody else does, you know, which in Illinois there is a difference, you know, on my identification or on my ID card it says I'm disabled, but in the rule books in the state of Illinois, if you're blind, there's no discounts or anything like if someone has a hearing problem or in a wheelchair or anything. So I think that law needs to be changed a little bit. But
just from your own experience hunting, do you think there should be certain regulations, or do you just recommend certain guidelines to make sure that it is done safely?
It all depends on the individual. There's 3 different stages of blindness. You got your high partial, which, you know, they can see really good. What may be a high partial, they may look at a tree and all they can see is one leaf on the whole tree, but they have, you know, 20/20 vision in that circle. You know, they just have to be more fine-tuned with their stuff. Low partial, you know, they can see some, you know, maybe out to 30 yards, which I still think, you know, there's no problem there with that. But a blind individual like me, you know, I think that there should be, I don't think there should be any guidelines or anything. I think the individual ought to be smart enough that they shouldn't go out there by themselves to do it. There needs to be another individual there with them.
Okay. And for yourself, even when during the time when you thought that you weren't able to go hunting, did you still keep a firearm in the house for self-defense?
Yes, I did.
Okay, and I guess there would be some people who ask questions about that, but what were your feelings about that, knowing that you couldn't see what you might have to shoot at?
Well, you know, if someone's trying to break into my house, it doesn't matter if I should be able to see or not. I'm defending myself and, you know, my kids if they're in the house with me. You know, I'm a strong believer in defending yourself, and if someone's trying to break or kick in my door or bust through a window and coming into my house, I think I should have the right, regardless if I'm blind, deaf, in a wheelchair, or there's nothing wrong with me, to be able to defend my house and my kids.
Now, Illinois now has a concealed carry law, and the state police are working up on rules, the specific rules, so they can implement it. Is that something you think that that you will go for?
Me, myself, no. But I don't think there should be any limitations to a blind individual being able to, you know, carry one if that's they get approved. You know, they have to go through all the training and stuff, and if they pass the training, I think they should be able to. You know, my preference is, no, I won't go for one.
Okay. Okay.
And I think you know, I know the gentleman that's going to be coming on next, I know he made some kind of statement that he don't think it's right to carry or own a gun, you know, and I think that's wrong, you know. I think, you know, anybody in the United States should be able to own a gun if they pass the background checks. And, you know, I passed the background checks for the state of Illinois. I got a fire identification card, you know, so I can go in and purchase guns. That's how my boys have got their guns. I went and bought their guns for them. And, you know, and as they've been raised up around them, they know how to handle a gun. And my little ones, they take their BB guns and they act like it's a shotgun and handle it, too, just like it would be a more powerful gun.
Okay. Well, Jeremy, I wanted to thank you very much for coming on Focus and talking with us. And are you going to be doing some hunting this fall?
Yeah, I'm getting geared up right now for bow season, using my crossbow coming October 1st. So.
Okay. Well, good hunting and stay safe. Thank you very much for being on the program with me.
Yes, and if anybody, any blind individual wants to get a hold of me, if they could, email you and then give them my phone number if you would.
Well, thank you very much. We'll certainly pass the information on to anybody who wants it.
All right, then. Thank you, and you all have a good day.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. This is Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and as you can tell, we're talking about the use of firearms when you are visually impaired. We were just talking with Jeremy Holderfield of Dongola, who has been a hunter pretty much all his life and took up hunting again a few years ago, even though he had lost his sight, working with his wife and his sons pretty much as a team. I want to bring on our next guest now, and that is Ray Campbell. He is the chairman and legislative chairman for the Illinois Council of the Blind. Ray, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. Nice to be with you.
And I understand you are blind yourself.
Yes, I am.
And I'm sorry that Jeremy was commenting on what he understood to be your views on the matter without your getting a chance to speak there. But maybe you could talk about what your feelings are on this topic as
it be. You know, thank you for the opportunity, Jim. What's interesting is since I was approached about doing this show, I've had a chance. I've been doing some communicating with some people and some research. My personal view is I personally would not choose to own a gun. In fact, I'm a little afraid of them. I've grown up around them. I grew up on a farm. I grew up doing some around people who hunted and doing some target practice and then things like that. And I'm actually scared of them. But at the same time, in kind of looking at it and thinking about it, I certainly, if a person who is blind, wants to own firearms either for hunting or to defend themselves or whatever, like anyone else, they need to be prepared to take on that awesome responsibility that is involved. It comes kind of back to an old saying that I really strongly believe in, with rights come responsibilities. And I think that's something that, you know, I was thinking of listening. I was thinking of maybe I ought to call Jeremy and see if I can get a little venison, because I do enjoy deer summer sausage. But anyway, no, it's a really, with rights come responsibilities, and I think that like anything else, people need to be prepared to take on those responsibilities if they're going to exercise, you know, whatever rights that they're planning to exercise.
I want to invite, and I also want to invite our audience to make a call or email if they have a comment or a question for Ray Campbell. And later on, we'll be talking with Sheriff Wethington from Iowa about his views on the subject. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. You can email us at WILL-talk. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. Ray, does the Illinois Council of the Blind have any official position on blind people using firearms or any particular programs or services?
No. We don't have any official positions on firearms. I think if someone were to come to our organization as Illinois drafts its concealed carry regulations, I think that if they were to try and put a visual, you know, the mechanics of shooting a gun, you don't need to have vision to do that. And if they were to try to put a visual acuity requirement in, frankly, I'm not sure it'd hold up in court, because under the Americans with Disabilities Act, you can't discriminate against people with disabilities in a whole host of activities. But I think, and second of all, Illinois already has a precedent, because the regulations to get the FOID card don't mention anything about vision, as Jeremy alluded to. So I think it would fall under our general belief that people who are blind, as long as they can, you know, perform all the essential functions of whatever it is they're trying to do, they're wanting to do, as long as they meet the qualifications, they should be able to exercise their rights to do whatever, whether it's get a firearm or whatever. Now, some people will say, well, okay, well, what about driving a car? Well, you have to be able to see. At this point in time, we're not to the self-driving car yet, although it's coming, but you do have to be able to see to drive a car. And so that's a little different. I don't think the analogy fits between driving a car and owning guns.
Well, Ray, I'm wondering, are there any activities that blind people do take part in that would not occur to sighted people, that they would assume that, well, you have to be able to see to do that in some way at all, but actually blind people have found options to make it work?
Well, I think we just heard about one, hunting. I think I'm aware of folks in different types of sports who have found ways to make it happen. I'm just trying to think about, well, running, for example, running marathons, things like that. I know a gentleman up here in Chicago area who runs half marathons and marathons, and he teams up with somebody to run with him.
And you'd think that, because marathons are, after all, done on the street, that you got to be able to see what's going on.
Yeah,
but it sounds like he copes.
Yeah, the average person, I think, might believe that you have to be able to see. Well, gee, you got to be able to see where the lines are and stuff. And he copes with it by having somebody run with him as a sighted guide. So there are ways. I think that one of the things that I would encourage folks to do is always, with anything, keep an open mind. If you think a blind person can't do it, keep an open mind and talk openly and honestly with the person. If someone comes to you and says, "Well, I want to participate in this or that thing that you were responsible for or heading up," talk openly and honestly with them and say, don't approach it as, "Well, I don't think you can do this, so you prove to me you can." Approach it to say, "Well, I've never had a blind person do this. Can we talk openly and honestly about, some ways that you could handle this particular activity or whatever?" I mean, even working in various jobs, whether it's a hiring somebody that's blind or letting them participate in a program, whatever it might be, there are ways to accomplish a whole lot of things in life.
Well, we're going to take a break in just a moment. I did want to ask you, Ray. And after the break, we'll bring on Sheriff Wethington from Iowa to ask him his views on the subject. But I was wondering, when it comes to the simple self-defense, are there other options besides having a weapon that blind people turn to? Or at least besides having a firearm?
Sure. I know a number of folks that have taken self-defense courses, like judo and martial arts type things, and those kinds of courses through various organizations to defend themselves, to equip themselves to be able to defend themselves, and that's probably the main thing I'm aware of. I am not aware, but I would not see a reason why a person who is blind couldn't use common things like, mace or pepper spray or things like that. I want to be careful what I say because I don't want to encourage somebody to use something they shouldn't, illegal or whatever, but to use those sort of techniques. Many of the self-defense techniques that are taught out there, I think, can be adapted and to folks who are blind or visually impaired, and even things like sprays and that, you're usually at close enough range, I think, to be able to get a pretty good shot on somebody. So those are techniques that folks are using out there. I'm pretty sure, just based on anecdotal knowledge.
Well, we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. We'll bring on Sheriff William Wethington of Cedar County, Iowa, who is a booster of allowing people without sight to carry concealed weapons. We'll be back in a moment. This is Focus on WILL. This is Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking about the question of blind people and firearms, or whether sight should be a requirement to get, for instance, a concealed carry license. Do you need to be able to see to shoot a gun? We've been talking to, we talked earlier at the beginning of our program to someone who is hunting without sight, a little assistance from his wife and sons, but he's definitely out there and he is bagging some game. We are talking right now with Ray Campbell of the Illinois Council of the Blind. And I want to bring into the program now William Wethington. He is the sheriff of Cedar County, Iowa. And Sheriff Wethington, thank you very much for being on Focus this morning.
Well, thanks for having me. And actually, my first name is Warren.
Warren. Okay, yeah. That's my typographical error. Thank you very much for the correction, Sheriff. Now, Iowa is ahead of Illinois by, I guess, just about almost 3 years of having a concealed carry law in place and up and running. And there are blind people who have applied, I understand, for concealed carry. Is that the case in your county?
I don't think I have any issued to the visually impaired now. It's not something we keep track of. It's not a requirement here in Iowa.
Is the issuing of the permits done in the county level in Iowa?
The sheriff of your county you reside in issues the permit.
Okay, so you're the one doing it in Cedar County.
Yes.
For you, it would not be a problem, I take it.
No, it's an issue of ability. There's people that can see better than I can. I can see better than other people. It's a totally blind person up close and making contact shots. It's just not a problem.
Okay, I understand that you had worked with your daughter who is visually impaired. Is that correct?
That is.
Tell me about that experience.
She's totally blind in her left eye. She can see movement, but she can't tell what it is. And then her right eye is 20/350. She's been around guns all her life. She's going to have some advantage because she can see something. She can hit a paper plate sized target at 10 yards. I have not spent any time teaching her really to do that in a self-defense role. It's up close, last ditch. Somebody, if I don't do something, they're going to kill me. And what we're working on now is just drawing the weapon, rotating it up into the midsection of the target, and stopping the threat. It's a contact shot. you know, there's no chance of missing doing that.
And I saw the video that the Des Moines Register had put up on their website of you working with your daughter. You're essentially working with paper plate targets, so they're not very big.
No. But, and her vision's bad enough that she can't see the sights. You know, people think that blind people are going to be just emptying the gun at sounds, and that's not the case. You know, blind people are rational, reasonable people also. And if I get maced or whatever, or in the dark, I'm visually impaired then also.
That's a great point.
Ray Campbell, I'm wondering, have you been hearing at your organization from blind people who have views on this issue?
We have not to this point heard any views on the issue, either positive or negative, at least our state organization. I have had some communication over the internet through a mailing list that our parent organization, the American Council of the Blind, runs. Just some, not about people being given permits or denied permits, but I have had communication. I've had communication on both sides with people that have very passionate views in the whole gun debate. Actually, I did hear from one individual who does keep a firearm for self-defense, and he talked about how he feels he would handle if presented with a situation. And it's along the lines of what the good sheriff said, is that he would want to make a shot to stop the threat, and feels that he's in a situation that he would be able to do that. Now, this person did preface his comments by saying that there are no kids in the home. Now, on the other side of the issue, someone who very anti-gun made the comment, well, how do you know if you're shooting at an intruder or shooting at, your kid getting up in the middle of the night to get something out of the fridge or something? And, you know, it's like the sheriff said, I know that most people who are blind are very reasonable people and are going to we're not going to empty our guns at sounds, I don't think. We're going to do our best to just like anybody would, I think, to try and handle the situation until that ultimate moment when you have to do what you have to do. I think back to presentations I've heard by J.J. Bittenbinder, a former detective with Chicago Police Department, who has said that, really kind of emphasized that, do whatever you have to do first. But if it comes to that ultimate moment, you need to make sure you're prepared to actually do what you need to do, take that action that you're about to take.
Well, I want to bring in a caller on line one who I think is going to be disagreeing with Sheriff Wethington. Paul from Champaign County, good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, I had a little trouble with the screener. I think it's a little untoward that you're relying on their listeners to have a dissenting opinion on this. I was a hunter in my youth in southern Illinois. The gentleman from Highland knows that he needs an assist. He needs somebody else. He doesn't have to be licensed himself. If he's always hunting with someone else, he has a good sense to not want to have a concealed carry either. So I just think that this, we have this maniacal distrust of the government, and I don't trust the government in a lot of ways, but I think that some regulation is in order, and I think being blind is something that would eliminate, I just get apoplectic about this. I just think it's taking this much too far, and I disagree. I think maybe a gun in one's home, if one really wants to have one if one's blind and it feels more secure, that would be fine. But concealed carry, carrying it in the public when a lot of confusion could happen. We've had just another accidental ricochet shooting of some by police of some people in Chicago. It's I dissent. I think it's absurd. I think we need more discussion about this. But I would hope that you would have on someone who says, yeah, this has gone too far. And I guess I'll hang on and see if anybody wants to me to say anything further. But I don't buy this at all. And I think there are a number of other people don't feel represented in this discussion. So.
Well, Paul, it's interesting, the comment you made. We had an email from Jack in Monticello who said he really thought that Jeremy Holderfield, who spoke at the beginning of the program, he's the blind hunter from Dongola, actually, was thoughtful and sympathetic. But Jack thought that Jeremy was assuming that everyone is just like him, who would be able to make these judgments about firearms. Sheriff, I'm wondering, just knowing that there are degrees of, as Jack writes, degrees of intelligence, wisdom, and mental capacity are varied, and the problem is, where do we draw the line? It's not like background checks have been that successful. What do you count on in order to make this work as far as allowing to have people without sight to have firearms and in a wide variety of cases?
Well, there's a couple points I want to make here. To start with, blind people, visually impaired people, they're constitutionally guaranteed the right to self-protection. Their lives are no more or no less valuable than anybody else's. And what people don't realize is blind people, everywhere you and I go, we get in a car, roll up the windows, lock the doors if we so decide, and there's that level of protection. Blind people have to walk, and they're not able to pick up on the cues. You know, like I've said before, my daughter is 5 foot nothing, and where any other woman would be able to look down the street and see there's a problem, you know, and either go to the other side of the street or just go the other way, my daughter's not going to pick up on that. And a blind person finds themselves right in the middle of a situation. It, again, the people that have the most to say about this negatively are not gun people. You know, they may have been hunters or whatever, but they don't truly understand what self-defense is. What I'm talking about is when that person has you by the throat and you're on the ground and there is absolutely nothing else you can do, if you don't fix this, you're going to die. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about hearing shots at the mall and trying to intervene and save the day. I'm talking about the visually impaired person that if they don't fix this problem right now, they're going to die. And there is absolutely no reason why a totally blind person can't do that. And also here in Iowa, permits to carry, you need a permit to carry to have a stun gun, a taser, a long-edged weapon. In Iowa, it doesn't cover just firearms. So, you know, the Americans with Disabilities and the Second Amendment, these people, they have the absolute right to protect themselves, and in my opinion, the responsibility to.
Sheriff, you just mentioned the fact that blind people won't necessarily be able to pick up on visual cues of approaching danger. I think Paul, our caller, was worrying about the visual cues of innocent people who could be close by in an incident where a person might use their concealed weapons. Is that the trade-off there, or do you feel that's really not a circumstance that's going to occur?
Well, every circumstance is different. You know, again, I would find it hard to believe that an attacker is going to assault somebody when there's witnesses around. I would like to think that if somebody sees an attacker assault somebody with a white cane, somebody might do something. But again, what I'm talking about is that contact shot. The attacker is on top of you. Draw the gun, rotate it into the midsection, and pull the trigger. You're not going to miss, and you're not going to have over-penetration. it's a safer shot than if I took a shot at somebody at 10, 15 yards away because there's a possibility I could miss. This isn't going to miss.
Well, this is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and there's still time for your questions or comments about firearms for the visually impaired. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. And you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Talking to Sheriff Warren Wethington of Cedar County, Iowa. Also on the line, Ray Campbell, the Treasurer and Legislative Chairman for the Illinois Council of the Blind. Ray, under these circumstances, when it comes to personal safety, you think there's specific training that that blind people should have that would be different from what sighted people would need?
I think, I guess what I would say is that first of all, I don't know if there's specific training that they should have. I think that what, just as is done in other facets of life and programming and such, that you'd want to make sure that you adapt the training to fit the needs of somebody who's blind or visually impaired. Kind of like the sheriff was saying, that that contact shot that he was talking about, that you would be in that type of a situation. So I definitely think that I don't know if there's specific specialized additional training that someone who is blind would want to have, which should have, but definitely the training needs to be adapted and in such a way that someone who is blind or visually impaired is going to be able to take full advantage of it and have the same opportunity to, if they're choosing to take that responsibility, to have that, to make those qualifications. I guess I would say to Paul, my question to Paul would be about, since he hunted especially in his youth, what part of shooting a gun does he believe a person who's blind can't do? And that's something that, other than seeing what you're aiming at, and the sheriff has already told us, the strategy there, and so has Jeremy, what part of shooting a gun does he think somebody who can't see can't do? And that would be just the question that I would have for him or anybody who feels the way he does.
Can I offer a little bit on the training?
Yes, Sheriff.
I am a firearms instructor, and when I put somebody through a class, they go through the exact same class time as what a certified peace officer does in the state of Iowa. I start on what the laws are, when deadly force is justified, and in Iowa, the definition is when a reasonable person in like circumstances can articulate why they felt their safety or life or that of another person is in danger of death or serious injury. We spend a lot of time on civil liability. What is your target? What's beyond the target? And then, they go through the same training classroom as what a peace officer does, what a tort claim is, what civil liability is, what punitive damages, federal, you can be charged federally or on the state level. None of them are double jeopardy. I've had people get up and walk out of my class because I make this so obvious. Some of them say, I don't want any part of this, and they get up and leave. Mm. And I can't blame somebody for that. But it's not like I just take somebody out, give them a gun, teach them how to shoot, and slap them on the back and tell them to have a nice life.
All right.
There's a lot of civil liability instruction.
Well, let's go and take another call. This is Joe from Urbana on line 2. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Hey, good morning. I'm just frustrated by the whole bit about having a gun create safety. Why do we peddle paranoia? Why do we peddle fear as opposed to anything else? I mean, yes, we have a lot of guns on our streets, but are we the safest nation? We're still not the safest nation. We have people. My brother killed himself, and he was a gun owner. And I just have a difficult time believing that guns create safety. He killed himself. gun, and he went through all the trainings also. It's my frustration, and you do not have to agree with it. It just doesn't make us any safer.
Joe, thank you very much for your comment. This is the big question, and it's bigger than the question of visual impairment of and I guess it's perhaps the big divide between people who are not going to own guns and people who are, as to whether guns are a route to personal safety.
Well, just to make a comment on that, I'm not saying that that this had anything to do with it. We had this terrible tragedy yesterday in Washington in the Navy Yard out there. Gun-free zone. Not allowing guns, would allowing the people in that building to have arms, would that have stopped that? We will never know the answer to that question. I would say to Joe and others that feel the way he does that, it's hard to say. I'd kind of agree with the sheriff. I mean, our personal protection is our responsibility. And if people are going to take that awesome responsibility and choose to own a firearm, that they better, to choose that right. They better be prepared to exercise the responsibility that comes with that. And if they're not, they need to be, perhaps take other measures as they so choose. To protect themselves, whether you're visually impaired or not, one side or the other, it's a very passionate debate, and it's a debate. I don't think there are any right answers to it.
Sheriff, you must be from your position been talking with people who don't agree with you on this issue. What can you say to them? What do you choose to say to them?
Well, again, like the last caller, I had a hard time hearing him, but these shootings, they happen in gun-free zones where people are not allowed to protect themselves. I'm 48 years old. Gun laws have gotten stricter and stricter, and we're going the other way on tragedies like this. It's what we're doing now is not working. And again, I still go back to people have the absolute right, and in my opinion, the responsibility and duty to protect themselves. You don't see these people going into police stations and gun shows and shooting the place up because they know they're not going to be successful. There was, 13 people killed yesterday? If there would have been somebody there allowed to protect themselves, and this guy decided to do this, there would be dead people, but not that many.
Sheriff, I wanted, we're just in about the last minute of the program, but I did want to get your opinion about an aspect of the Illinois concealed carry law. I don't know if this exists in Iowa or not. It does require passing a range test with about a 70% score. Is that realistic? Is that possible with people without sight?
Again, here in Iowa, prior to 2011, it was up to the sheriff to pick the course. Obviously, the sheriff prior to me, it was a 25-yard bullseye. The problem I had with it was self-defense shootings are 7 feet and in. It weeded a lot of people out that were proficient within self-defense ranges. It needs to be reasonable. A 25-yard bullseye is unacceptable for what these people are going to be doing.
Okay, so it really does matter as to what distance is involved there.
Yes. I really don't think, for me, it would be hard to articulate how somebody at 25 yards away posed a threat to me. And just to me, you would be better looking for cover or something other than shooting that far. But a visually impaired person is not going to be shooting that far. Okay. And if the state mandates even a 15-yard course, it's gonna eliminate the visually impaired people.
Okay. That is all the time we have on Focus today. We've been talking about firearms and the visually impaired with Warren Wethington, the sheriff of Cedar County, Iowa. Thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thank you.
And also thank you to Ray Campbell from the Illinois Council of the Blind. And
Thank you.
And earlier on the program, Jeremy Holderfield of Dongola, who talked about hunting even after he losing his sight. We welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website. You can go directly directly to our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. We are likely the first result on your search engine under WILL Focus. Today's show, produced by Lindsay Moon, Jason Croft is our technical director and handles your calls. We'll be back with the program tomorrow about the issue of private rehoming, a type of adoption with serious side effects. That's tomorrow on Focus on WILL.